Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Steve, I know this is all happening very, very quickly, but very, very good news about the potential end to this teacher strike. This happened, I want to say quickly, I know the kids have been out of school for 10 days, but these developments are unraveling very quickly.
That's a pretty long strike. And the first indications we got were Jesse Sharkey earlier today saying he thought there could be a tentative deal today. And then Mayor Lightfoot saying, and her phrase was, the tentative deal is on the table. And she said it's up to the union to decide whether to present it to the House of Delegates. Now, I don't know if that's last-minute sort of gamesmanship or if there is a deal that both sides have agreed to, but it certainly looks like it. I mean, Sharkey had talked about bringing the deal to the House of Delegates today as well, so things could be wrapping up later this afternoon.
I sure hope so. Wasn't the deadline yesterday at noon about the playoffs for sports? Will they extend that? I would hope that, I think Ryan Burrow's been looking into that.
Right, and he's busy right now, but the way he explained it to me was that if they ratify it today and the teams can practice today, then they would be eligible to play in the weekend. So, that might still be okay.
And the practice SAT, the PSAT, that I think has been canceled?
Has it been canceled? I thought that day came and went already.
I don't know. I just I would really like to see this solved.
Yeah.
I did not see teachers out there to honk at today. I like honking at them. In support of them, not at them.
At them. Was this weather related? Is that why they weren't out today?
I don't know. It snowed.
Yeah.
Which I was not ready for.
I didn't get any. I live in Evanston, as you know, and we didn't get any snow out there, but I passed by two different cars that looked like they just came in from Alaska. They were covered in snow.
They must have come from LaGrange, because we had like
LaGrange had a
2
bunch.
Inches for sure. And it was heavy, and I got a new car and do not have a brush in my car.
Is that a Christmas hint?
No, I can't wait till Christmas. I'm going to pick one up on the way home.
Yeah, you got to have a brush.
Yeah,
that should be standard issue when you get a car in Chicago. They should just give you a nice big snow brush.
I didn't think about it yet. I mean, I knew it was coming tomorrow.
Are you transferring the snow brush you had in your old car to the new one, or do you have to get a new one?
No, I told Jim to keep the old one.
Yeah.
This is bad timing. They dug out our backyard for a patio and removed our back steps yesterday.
Oh, that is bad timing.
I mean, that was
horrible
yesterday.
Timing.
We have a car in the shop, and the shovels were hard to get to in the shed because the backyard is ripped up.
Yeah.
This was not good planning.
And yet you made it here in plenty of time today.
I left early today.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Nicely
I thought it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of Chicagoland because usually the first snow, everybody goes, huh?
Well, I think this time, because I was thinking about that as I was driving in, I think because it's so regional this time, like a lot of times when we have snowstorms, it hits everybody, but this one was extremely sectioned off. So maybe that's part of it.
That could be.
Yeah,
that's true. As I got closer to the city, there was not a lot of slush out there.
With what you just described, did you ever go through this where you say to yourself, I can't remember the last time everything I own was working at the same time?
We've had a couple of weeks like that.
You mean physically?
Well, sometimes it's physically. Sometimes it's within your own body or one of a family member. Sometimes it's your car. Sometimes it's your house.
Yeah.
You just go, what has it been, 3 years since everything was working simultaneously?
I don't think it's ever worked simultaneously. There's always something, and I know that's life. That's what makes it exciting, right?
Yes. Yes. But I have found myself, like, every once in a while, I'll go, wow, all we have to do is get that fixed, and everything will be working, and
until
then something
the
happens. Yeah.
A bunch of people, actually, are pointing out on the text line, today is the last day the teachers have health insurance coverage.
Oh, that's interesting.
So perhaps that's why. Listen, I don't fault them for holding out for what, because it's gotten better than the original offer, so it worked.
Steve, would you say, I don't have all the details in front of me, and I don't know if you do either, but would you call this, from what we know so far, a straight-up compromise, or was one side giving in more than the other side? Is it easy to tell that or not?
I don't know that yet.
Hard to
say. To see some of the details.
All right.
I mean, the teacher started with a 16% raise, which is pretty, that's a pretty nice starting point.
Yeah.
Yeah. The PSAT has been canceled, and by the way, teachers at Sullivan were out in full force today. I did not drive by you. I would have honked in your favor.
That's my dad's high school.
Really?
That's where he went.
What year is he?
He's old. We don't talk about years anymore. We classify it as a long time ago.
Well, I was looking for the teachers, and I shouldn't have said the weather, because, or someone said the weather, because if they're striking,
yes,
they're striking. They were out there on days that it was just raining horribly.
That's a brutal day.
Yeah, this is better than that, although it's turning to rain.
Yeah.
Damn you, Tom Skilling. We were supposed to have it on Halloween. I bought my candy yesterday.
It's coming tomorrow,
but
too.
Yeah, maybe. They're not canceling tomorrow's potential snow.
I know, but I was not ready for this day.
Oh.
And yet you overcame it.
So far.
You're resilient.
Yeah.
Although, Jimmy Mack was giving my son Dylan a ride to school this morning.
You're both son, not just your son. It's his son, too.
Thank you, Bill.
Our son, yeah. Yeah, I guess.
Standing up for dad.
Wow, we just learned a lot about your family life. He's probably Jimmy's son. Go ahead.
No, he is.
He is definitely? All right.
He's definitely mine.
I'll need to see the test results, but that's fine.
All right. So Jim was driving Dylan to school, and somebody blew a stop sign in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And Jim said if there wasn't quick maneuvering on his part, I mean, it all happened so fast, he would have been T-boned. This guy was flying down the street and blew a stop sign, so that's not a good way to start your day.
Terrible day. Terrible way to
start
the day.
But the good news is, no T-bone.
Did
I prefer ribeye.
Did Jimmy try to catch up with him to let him know what he did was wrong?
No, and typically that
you get that sometimes, right?
I would do that, too. And I said, did anyone take a picture of his license plate? Because let's get this person.
Yes.
But it happened so quickly, and the guy was going so fast.
Couldn't react.
And Dylan was running late to get to school, so... It was just, let's get there.
My inclination is always to catch up to that person to let them know what they did was not a good thing. But I don't know. I mean,
I wouldn't do that.
It's been explained to me that maybe that's not a good idea.
No, but you get their license plate number and you call the police and say, this guy.
They don't do anything.
Yes, they do.
What would they do?
They don't do anything.
I would give a plate number and say, this guy almost hit me.
And they say what?
And then they'd check his license. And what if there's an outstanding ticket or warrant or something?
Yeah.
What?
I don't think they would. They would file it. They would go, okay, we'll look into this.
They wouldn't even file it. Why are you guys such doubting Thomases?
They'd be like, well, Wendy called again.
Right.
They are sick of me at the LaGrange Police Station. Right. I'll give you that.
Right. All right.
Neighborhood Watch. That's what I do.
We'll take a break. We'll come back. We have things to discuss with you. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. That's the text line and the phone line. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us. You can text us there. You didn't by any chance happen to see last night's Game 6 of the World Series, did you?
No, but I heard the Nats are doing well.
They've tied it up. It's 3 games apiece. Tonight is the last game.
Exciting.
It is exciting. Game 7 is always exciting in any sport. They pointed out yesterday at the end of the game that there have been 1,420 seven-game series in 3 major sports, baseball, basketball, and hockey. Football does not apply because their playoff rules are different. It's you play a game. If you win, you go on. If not, you're done. There's no best-of-seven series. But in hockey, in baseball, and in basketball, it's a seven-game series. So there have been 1,420 of these throughout time. This is the only one that has ever gone where the visiting team has won every game. All 6 games have been won by the visiting team. Very, very strange.
That's pretty cool.
Because they always talk in sports about your home field advantage. You want home field advantage. But this series proves almost the exact opposite. That home field advantage isn't an advantage at all.
So you're the gambler. Does that mean you put your money on Houston tonight?
Well, tonight I would put, if what has happened so far holds true, Steve, it would be the opposite. It's Washington that's the away team.
No, but I mean, what are the odds?
Oh,
it's never
happened. What you're saying. Interesting.
Odds, schmods.
Odds, as Wendy said, odds, schmods.
You vote with your heart. Right. You right. bet with your heart.
Right.
Come on, you go to Arlington.
You want to bet with your head. You never want to bet with your heart.
Oh, I've never bet with my head. Ever.
Don't you always bet on the team that's playing the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yes.
Haven't you always done that?
Even though I love the Harlem Globetrotters.
The Harlem Globetrotters are amazing.
I go for the underdog a lot.
It pays off bigger if you bet on the other team. Last night's game was interesting for many reasons, but most notably, there was a call where they called interference from a guy named Trey Turner, who was clearly not interfering. He was in the base path. but they called him out for interference. It could have changed the game. It ended up not changing the game. The Nationals still won. But I was saying to Steve, they did something very brave over at Fox Sports. He was furious. Trey Turner was furious that they called him out for obstruction, right? So they have him in the dugout screaming and yelling about this, and they mic'd him, and they played everything he said, and I'm listening going, at some point, he's going to say something that's not TV-friendly.
He's going to swear.
Positive, and he didn't, somehow.
Do you think I could ever do that?
No. That's the bet to take. Not if it's going to be the Nationals winning tonight or the Astros. Take that bet. That's the fun bet. But he was livid, and the manager of the Nationals got kicked out. He was screaming and yelling, and it took two or three coaches to hold him back.
Our friend Davey Martinez.
Former Cub Davey Martinez, Wendy. Yeah.
He's good looking.
So Steve asked me an interesting question, and I want to get your take on this.
Well, thank you.
He said, well, you're welcome, Steve.
You don't know it yet.
He said, when you're watching a game, and this is game six of the World Series, it's a big game. He goes, when you're watching a game like that, are you just watching the game or are you doing other things?
I didn't even watch. I don't care.
You didn't watch at all.
Typically when you're watching the Hawks or the Bears or...
I watch the game.
You sit there and watch
the game.
Yes,
I do.
Yeah, I can't do that anymore.
What changed, Steve? Well, you used to do it and not anymore, but why?
I don't know. I really don't know. Like, I feel like it's not like I have better things to do most of
right.
the time. I think my attention span has suffered with all the electronics and things like that. I don't know. But I can't think. The opening game for the Bears-Packers this year,
yeah.
I actually texted my buddy. I said, this is the year I'm going to really devote to watching the Bears season.
You picked a horrible year to
yeah,
make that declaration.
Did.
I mean, I
but
didn't finish the game.
A game, a playoff type thing, if our teams are in it.
Yeah.
You wouldn't watch from beginning to end,
well,
would you?
Well, if my team was in it, sure.
That's all I mean. That's
if
all I'm
saying.
If it was
a local team, yeah, there would be nothing. There would be no distraction. All my attention would be on the game.
Me too. I would watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
I would pause it if I had to go get some Fritos or whatever,
right.
And come back and watch the entire thing. But if it's our team.
I used to be able to sit on the couch on Sunday and watch, just sit there and be taken away by a game, and I just can't do it anymore.
I don't like watching other people's games. Like, if we're not in it,
oh, if
we're
it's
not
teams
invested,
that are not Chicago
yeah.
teams.
Like, I
right.
don't like other people's kids. I only like my own. So why would I watch other people's teams? I mean, I like them, but,
but at a distance.
Well, I'm not going to hug and kiss them.
What if it's other people's kids playing against each other in a game on TV? Would you mm-hmm. watch? You still wouldn't watch
no.
that.
I think the whole not hugging and kissing is a good idea, Wendy.
I have the story, and I've said it before, but I've never been able to forget it. Through another radio show, we went to Hawaii.
Yeah.
And it might have been Mexico. I don't know. Spike Manton was
yeah.
with us.
I know that it's Hawaii because he's not allowed to leave the U.S. borders.
Okay. And we wanted to go out, Spike and his wife and Jimmy Mack and I.
Yeah.
We were going to go out for dinner, so we got a babysitter through the hotel to
mm-hmm.
watch our kids.
Mm-hmm.
They have two kids. We had two kids. Ours were pretty little at the time, but we split a babysitter. And as we were, leaving, I'm like, okay, boys, be good. And Spike gave
his... And
then
a polite handshake to each of the boys.
No, I hugged and kissed them because they're my kids. And then Spike hugged and kissed his kids
yes.
and said, all right, have fun. If you need us, we'll be at this restaurant.
Yeah.
And then he came over to my kids and hugged and kissed them. And
yeah.
Jim and I were just looking at each other like,
yeah.
he's kissing our kids.
Yep.
And then I look back at Jim, I go, I'm not kissing his kids.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't do. Would you?
Well,
you wouldn't do that either.
Would I kiss somebody else's kids?
Yeah, you don't even like anyone other than your family members to hug you. So I can't imagine you. A nephew, obviously a relative,
right.
yes. But just your friend's kids?
Well, Spike is a very affectionate guy. He, for a while, would just go door to door and hug people's kids, but they put a stop to that. That had to stop sooner more than later. I don't know how I would have handled that. You didn't say anything to him, obviously.
No, I just talk about it on the radio many years after.
That's much
no,
better.
No, I said something to him like, we
hey,
were out to dinner
back
and I
away
said,
from my kids.
I'm not going to apologize. I didn't kiss your kids. I'm never going to kiss your kids.
How old were your kids at the time?
Probably like 2 and 6, no, like 4 and 8 maybe.
Huggable.
And I think their kids are a little older than mine.
Yeah.
See, when your kids are older, you miss the littler kids, so you're more likely to hug.
Are you going to hug and kiss? Say you split a babysitter with a friend of yours and they're little kids. Would you hug and kiss their kids?
I wouldn't kiss, no.
See?
A hug.
No, he hugged and kissed them.
Like a big bear hug? What kind of hug was it?
Like a hug and then kiss down on their head.
Oh,
and,
that was lovely.
And then it made me, you know, I don't want other people kissing my kid.
It was a head kiss, though? That's different.
I don't really remember. I just know
like
that
Winnie the Pooh would give to Eeyore?
You want like the fraternal slug on the arm? Hey, buddy.
No, I think it was a hug. And he didn't kiss him on the lips, but it might have been the cheek or the head. But still, he kissed my kids.
My mom swatted one of their friend's kids. We were all in Disney World, and my mom was walking behind a bunch of us. And this kid, David, who's obviously not related to us, was goofing around too much. And my mom just reached forward and swatted him on the head because she thought it was my brother because they have a similar hair color. And David behaved himself the rest of the trip. he was very good the rest of the way.
It means more coming from another parent
right,
other
cause
than
Right,
because
then
yours.
You say, I must have done something wrong for somebody else's mom to swat me in the back.
Because there
of
are
head.
Those parents who will swat other kids, you know?
Right.
I have never done that. In fact, and we can talk to Dr. John Duffy about this because I read somewhere many years ago, if you treat your kid like you would treat your friend's kid, you would be nicer and more patient.
Well, you've said that's the creed that your family takes on all the time. You said you're always nicer to strangers than each other.
Absolutely. So if you, because, you know, if you had a play date and your friend's kid was over, another kid was over, and they spilled cereal on the ground, you'd be like, oh, oopsie,
it's
what happened?
Cereal, no big
Let's
deal.
Clean it up. If my kid did it, I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
Do you have two left hands to go with your two left feet?
Wow.
So if you treat a kid that's not your, or if you treat your kid like a stranger's kid.
Yeah, it's better for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, because the stranger's always right, as my mom taught us. She was always nicer to people she didn't know than her own family members, which made me the resilient young woman that I am today.
Yeah, it paid off. It paid off beautifully.
Don't kiss my kids.
Were you more, like, after that incident, were you just more mindful of who was near them, as if to say, if this ever happens again, I'm gonna cut it short. I'm going to say to whoever's about to hug and kiss my kids, hey, these are my kids. No one hugs and kisses them but me.
No, I think the whole part of it was I felt guilty that I didn't return the favor and kiss his kids.
Did you, though?
Yeah,
it doesn't seem like you.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not kissing the kids. I'm not kissing their kids. They're not my kids. But then I felt bad about it.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, he kissed our kids.
Well,
kid doesn't like to be hugged and kissed and have a good time.
Did his kids reach out to you, like hold their arms out as if to say, hey, what's wrong with us? We like a good hug and a kiss. What did we do wrong?
No, they crossed their arms in front of him, even while Spike was hugging and kissing them. It just
my mom
weird
would have flown in and swatted all four of them.
Isn't that
I'll
funny?
Teach them a lesson.
I can't see your mom doing a much swatting
oh,
in her life.
She was ninja-like.
Oh, was she?
She was very fast with the swat, and there was no thought. She just saw a boy that could have been her one of her own doing something she didn't like. So it was a very quick, like that. You know, like in kung fu movies where you go, wow, how did they do it that fast? She could do it that fast.
I was thinking of a frog's tongue.
She was like
kind
that.
Of like that.
It was exactly like that. That's it. That's the move. Yeah.
Well, we got slapped. I got, you know, slapped a lot because I had a smart mouth. Shocker.
How often is a lot?
Weekly.
Was it once a week or so? On average, once a week?
Yeah. My mom was the master of the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
She didn't cook with it much, but she hit us with it. And she broke it on my brother's shoulder just from all the times of whacking us with
right.
it. You know, the fibers of the wood weaken a little
right.
bit.
Would she go after the wooden spoon and come back, or did she always have one in her hand?
She went at, she would. It,
did
usually,
she do what my parents would do, which is to say, go get my wooden spoon?
No.
And then you'd go, if you're going to hit me with something, you have to put out some effort. I'm not going to go get it.
That's how you
that's
said
not
it?
On me.
Benny Hill chase around the house.
My dad always used to also say, this is classic, he'd go, you know what's going to happen if I take my belt off? And then we'd go, your pants will fall down. That was not the right
harder.
Answer. That turns out to not be the right answer.
My dad did that, too, more for my brother and sister. I don't recall being hit by him.
Yeah.
But again, he died when I was 10.
Yeah.
But he would take the belt and, like, snap it
yes.
together. So that
the
just
warning
hearing
snap.
That.
Yeah.
And sometimes he would hit the bed to go, you know, this
right.
could, I could move over.
This does some damage.
Yeah.
That's torture, really.
Yeah, but
I mean, that's criminal now.
Well, now, and it's funny because your kids will let you know, like, I can call DCFS, right, and I hand them the phone.
But you had that little bungalow house on Guantanamo Bay that was so lovely.
That's
for all
not
those
even
years.
Funny. That's just. All right. Well, we can talk to Dr. John Duffy about that.
Yes. Steve, thanks very much. Hi, guys. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. There is a great article today on Huffington Post. A woman named Tonalyn Hornig wrote an article wherein she's talking about her son, who is 6 years old, and his decision for Halloween this year. Keep in mind, he is six. Is to be a princess. He wants to dress like a princess. So the gist of this article is her weighing the pros and cons of letting her son dress as a princess for Halloween. What sort of a statement does it make if she lets him dress as a princess for Halloween? What sort of a statement does it make if she does not let him dress as a princess for Halloween? Your immediate thoughts are?
Who cares? Let a kid dress up. What's the difference if he's a princess or the toad?
Well, she goes out of her way to say, although she's fine with it, she knows that there could be some consequences, that adults along the way, that kids along the way will say things and do things to her son that might not be in his best interest. That's understandable.
Listen, I know kids teased each other when we were growing up. That's what they did. That's what you did.
Since the beginning of time.
Yes.
That's part of it. You get through life, somebody's going to rip you for something. Almost every day.
Right. Whether it be your name, something you're wearing. But when was it
the
okay?
The shape of your body, the color of your hair, your accent, the way you do anything. Everything's up for scrutiny.
Which right? is not right or fair, but it happens.
Right.
But when was it okay for adults to get in on the teasing?
That's a good question. I
because
don't know the answer
I
to that.
Because I feel like this mom right. might be more worried about like the neighborhood moms that are like, oh, did you see she let him dress up as a princess?
Yeah. You get it. There is an element of that. There's no doubt about it. There's an element of that.
I don't know who the Joneses are, but I am done keeping up with them.
You can't keep up with them. You can't keep up with them. Let's say, Wendy, hypothetically, one of your boys at the age of six said to you exactly this. I've thought about various Halloween options. This is how I talked as a six-year-old, so I'm assuming other six-year-olds also use this sort of language. I have exercised all my Halloween options, and I have opted to go with that of a princess. You say what?
I say, oh, cool.
Yeah?
Let's get your good costume going.
You're very progressive. That's excellent.
It's a costume.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you're supposed to
yes.
dress up as something you aren't?
Yes. Yes.
It's Halloween. You know, I don't know how I'd react if he... I don't know because I'm not in the position.
Right.
But if he just said, you know, I want to dress up as a princess every day.
Yeah.
I would say, oh, no, there are just special days when you can be a princess. No one's a princess every day.
But isn't that to some extent a little restrictive? Like, let's say he was a kid that made him happy.
Yeah.
That he would come home from school. He looked forward to coming home from school and dressing up like a Disney princess.
Oh,
or
I
any
don't
princess.
Care about that. I just meant like wearing it to school.
Oh, okay.
Although there's a time in high school where sometimes boys wear like the same Blackhawk sweatshirt like the whole year.
Yeah.
And then at teacher conferences, you say, I wash this thing every other night. Please don't think it's gone the whole year.
Right.
So at some point, you let the kid do what they want to do.
Right.
As long as it's not hurting someone else, what is the big deal? Wearing a princess costume is not going to change my kid's vision of who he is or what he wants to be.
It's not going to change your kid's vision, but he'll be perceived differently. You know that, right?
Yeah, well, they already are.
Well, yeah.
Seriously.
I know.
And it's so hard to fit in. I mean, you think about it. There were some kids in high school who just didn't fit in, either jocks or freaks or frocks, who were a combo of both of them.
Mm.
But now, like, you run into them, and they're cooler than any other person ever was.
Right.
It's just they're quirky, and quirky and individuality is great later on. It just doesn't always work easily in high school
yeah.
or junior high, especially.
But far more acceptable now than a generation ago.
Yes.
Far more.
Can Pat talk to us? Hi, Pat. What's going on?
Hi. How are you today?
We're great.
Good. I'm interested in your conversation. I worked in a high school for many, many, many years. And one year, a student, a very put-together student, walked into the classroom, and he was wearing a dress. And this was very clearly a dress, not a long top or anything like that. It was a dress to his knees and tights. And he walked in and sat down as if this was fine. And nobody said anything, though. So we made it about halfway through the class. I was an aide at the time. And I walked up and I said, okay, I've got to ask, why are you wearing a dress? And he said, why not?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, there's nothing to say to that.
Right.
What can you
right.
say?
Right.
Not a thing.
What was the reaction from others around him at school, though? Was it accepted or was it questioned or what?
Nobody said anything.
That surprises me.
The only thing that was said was, hey, like your dress. And he said, thank you.
Oh.
As if he wasn't wearing anything odd. And I think a lot of it had to do with, number one, he was a really cool guy. But number two, he didn't treat it like he was wearing anything odd.
Good for that kid.
Nobody else seemed to.
Excellent. He's ahead of the game.
Although that wouldn't happen today. And why not? You'd think people would be more accepting.
That happened about 2 years ago.
Oh, all right. Well, good. Well, Pat, thank you for sharing that. That gives me more hope than I've ever had before. Can we talk to Rob?
Yeah, please. I wouldn't do anything until I heard from Rob. Rob, how are you?
I'm all right, guys.
What do you make of all this?
Well, there's no reason why he can't wear it. When I was a kid, I wore a belly dancer costume.
Can I just have... why? Did you have nice abs? What was the deal?
I'm glad you said abs, by the way.
Oh, okay.
No, it's just a costume. That's all in. I wore it and went across the street to the school parade, and I came in first place.
Good for you. How old were you?
I was about 8.
I love it.
And they all thought I was a girl.
Oh.
And so at the end, I pulled off the wig, and then they were all shocked that I was a guy.
So you got a bonus prize.
Yes.
Exactly. Nobody ever teased me about it. They all thought it was kind of cool. They all laughed. We had a good time. I went trick-or-treating and got a lot of candy.
Well, good for you.
But don't you think there's some separation in a costume where it's obvious that the guy is playing a girl? You know, everybody at some point, you see a costume when you're in school that's so blatant that somebody's making fun. I'm a guy, but I'm going to dress as a hula girl. As opposed to this kid where he legitimately is going for the princess look. Is there a difference there or no difference?
There's no difference.
No?
I mean, if you could have seen my costume, boy, no difference. Mine revealed a lot more. I kind of had I Dream of Jeannie's outfit on.
Oh, wow. Did you show belly button?
Yes, I did. I had a gem in it.
Oh. You
sexy little Rob.
My mom glued this black gem in my belly button.
That's awesome. Well, good.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you for calling and weighing in on that. I don't think there's anything wrong. There are guys in college and high school that dress as cheerleaders.
Right.
Why is that acceptable?
That's what I'm saying. That's common. I think because they're doing it as such a caricature, I don't know that this kid is looking at it quite that way. He's just comfortable. He enjoys princesses and wants to dress like one. But I wonder. All right, let's do this. Your thoughts on this. 312-981-7200. It's a 6-year-old kid, a little boy who just wants to dress like a princess for Halloween. His mom is debating whether or not that's a good idea. Your thoughts next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Oh, I love this song. Ministry. Every day is Halloween.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're telling you this story. It's on Huffington Post. You can read it for yourself. It's a writer who writes, if my son is a princess for Halloween, will he get more tricks or treats? It's a writer debating whether or not to let her 6-year-old son dress up as a princess tomorrow for Halloween. Your thoughts at 312-981-7200.
Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good. How are you?
What are your thoughts on this?
So I didn't see the article, but I think there is a much bigger element missing. Start the conversation of what's appealing to them about that. And if they want to dress up, they want to dress up. But if they are coming home wanting to do that every day, then maybe, you know, they're identifying with a different gender. And that's a huge opportunity to start that conversation early and to be accepting and loving, because kids know. I mean, at a young age, they sense those things. So it could be a bigger something else going on other than, oh, it's just my costume, you know?
That's a great point. And to just start the conversation and just say, hey, yeah, you can dress however you want. That's a good way of looking at it, Lisa. And the kid might be trying to say something.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. Thanks, Lisa. Wendy, there's a text that addresses exactly that. This is from 262. I made my 5-year-old son a Cinderella costume for Halloween. He loved it. Nobody teased him, although many thought that he was a girl, and he loved that. I will add the caveat, this child is now 19, is my transgender daughter, amazingly happy now. She knew even then who she was.
That's a happy ending.
That is, yeah.
That's a great ending to that story. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, I have a story to tell about my son. And first of all, I have no problem with boys dressing up as girls. The girl across the street was having a Halloween party. They were going into eighth grade. He put on a dress, or I put it on him, a wig, and a pair of my shoes that he fit into. When he went over and knocked on the door, the girl who was giving the party said, "May I help you?" She had no idea who it was, and he kept saying, "It's me, it's me." And they all burst out laughing. They all had a good laugh out of it. He looked like a great girl with the clothes on it, and nobody had anything different to say about it.
Excellent.
So I just wanted to share that. They had a great time. They were going into eighth grade, and it was all in fun.
That's how it should be.
Thanks, Marlene.
Yeah, you bet.
Have a nice Halloween.
We appreciate it. Anxious to talk to John. Hi, John.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Your son?
I'm that parent that would probably say no and discourage my male child from dressing up as a female.
Can I just ask why?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. It happened, I guess, when he was about 2 and maybe his older sister was 3.5 or 4. His cousin was 2 and his other cousin was 3.5 or 4. They're all 3 females. He was a male. He still is a male, right? And they are all putting on their dress-up things that the young girls did at the time, and he started to put it on. I said, take that off, you're not a girl. And I'm completely sensitive to the one lady who called in and said that her male child is now a transgender. I get all of that. I'm just giving you the real other side that probably most people don't want to say, but is truly out there. And I'm not telling you it's right. I'm just telling you it's the way it is.
And I appreciate your honesty. And, you know, maybe some people would have a problem with it. My question to you, John, is how old? Well, you don't have to get specifics. But what if all of a sudden, you know, your son tells you, I identify more with being a woman?
Right. And that's the thing that I struggle with, because I do understand, and I can't imagine anyone growing up like that. As we all talked about, high school can be difficult as it is, let alone struggling with that gender identity. I can't imagine what those kids are going through. I can just simply tell you how I felt as a dad at the time, and I still would today, is that if they're so impressionable at that young of an age, if they're struggling and don't know which way they want to be, maybe they think they want to be a female or think they want to be a male, and I don't know that I have any influence at all. I'm just thinking that maybe I did at that time and influenced him to be more of the male child, and he's a very masculine male child he is today. I know that's very naive in my thinking.
But that's your thinking.
I'm aware that we're... Well, my thinking is I do believe that a person is probably born feeling they're either, you know, homosexual or very masculine or very feminine or this transgender thing. I think I'm aware of that, but also what if there is a certain way that we can influence them as a parent, right? Just as a kid's not born a racist, but some kids are raised by parents that aren't very good and raise their kid to not like a person for the color of their hair, color of their skin, you know, sexuality, religion, or whatnot. We know that that's a fact. Is there also maybe a small possibility that we could be influencing them to still be a feminine female or a masculine male?
But, John, based on what you said at the beginning, where you say a child is born with a proclivity to be a certain way, don't you think that that child probably wouldn't be tipped in one direction or the other just from dressing up on one particular Halloween? That wouldn't change a child's destiny, would it?
You know what? I don't have an answer to that. And you're probably right. I don't know. Like I said, I hesitate calling in, but I'm just calling in to tell you.
No, don't hesitate.
It didn't happen
at
Halloween.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't happen at Halloween. It was my boy playing with his older sister and his two female cousins at a very young age. And
yeah.
I said, no, you take that princess thing off. You're not a princess.
And that's okay. You know what? We as parents do what we can. We love our kids and we try our best. That's all we can do. And I do agree with you that it seems racism is taught, but you're not born a racist. Sometimes you're born, well, you are born with the feeling that you're not, your inner sex doesn't match your outer one, you know? So racism isn't inborn. Your gender is.
I know. I sort of understand what you're saying. Again, I'm just giving you the outside opinion here that probably more people think but are afraid to call in, and I'm just sort of telling you it's out there. I'm not telling you it's right.
Sure.
I'm not telling you it's wrong, but it's out there.
Well, we appreciate you giving that view. I know you were reluctant to call in with this, but I'm glad you did. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks. Have
all
a
right.
good day, guys.
You too. We really appreciate your honesty.
Thanks, Wendy.
Have a good one. It's true. There are a lot of people that believe that.
Here's a text, 630 Wendy. I graduated from high school in 1983. The football team dressed as cheerleaders every year. We had that same tradition in our high school at either homecoming or turnabout, I don't remember which. The football team would all come out dressed as cheerleaders and the place would go wild, right? And then I thought, it's really strange because a lot of these guys have this weird, not all of them, but a lot of them had a weird homophobic view all the time. But on that particular day when they were dressed as girls, as cheerleaders, they didn't think that way.
Very peculiar. I'd be really surprised if that happens anymore.
I don't think it does, Steve.
I did that once in high school, too, in a skit, you know, and you overdo everything. And I'll never forget my Spanish teacher. She said, I am so disappointed in that's what you think of girls. I was a junior in high school.
But it wasn't just you. It was everybody.
But
right?
I had never thought of it until Senora Edwards scolded me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, oh, I kind of get that now. Yeah.
My sons both did it.
But how long ago?
Well, probably 8 years for one.
Interesting.
And like 10 years for the other son. But they were on the cross country and track teams, and they have a powder puff football game every year. So the girls play a football game. The juniors play against the senior girls. And they have a game, and the guys are the cheerleaders.
And I think
they all dress up.
They did
hilarious.
That recently at my kids' high school's, like a talent show or something.
I think they still do it.
Yeah. And the place goes nuts, right?
Yeah.
People love that.
Oh, yeah, they were doing flips. I mean, the kid, you know, the boys were doing all these, you know, mounts, and they were all falling down.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. John Duffy will be on with us. We can chat with him about that.
Good idea.
But
very
let's
good.
Take a break right now. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is here. He comes by every other Wednesday and we talk about affairs of the mind. John, I don't know if you had a chance to hear our last segment, but we were talking about a woman who writes for Huffington Post, and she just put in this article, it came out this morning, about her six-year-old son that wants to dress like a princess for Halloween. She has kind of an inner struggle. She's wondering what sort of a message it sends if she lets him dress like a princess,
right.
What sort of a message it sends if she doesn't let him dress like a princess. What are your thoughts on this?
Times have changed so fast that this is actually a question that was posed to me when I was a relatively new therapist about 15, maybe 20 years ago. And it felt like a pretty hard no, like, oh, he's going to get bullied. You don't want to put him in that position. Absolutely. Let's find some other costume for him. And literally, it was a Halloween costume. Now, kids are so comfortable with the idea of gender fluidity and, you know, and the LGBTQ community that the taboo around that, even among young kids, is dissipating really, really quickly. So my answer would be completely different now. I totally understand where your texter John was coming from because...
Yeah, and I feel he's taken some heat.
I can imagine.
And he was being honest.
Yeah. Yeah, he was being honest, and I think for a lot... Listen, I work with a lot of parents whose kids come out in one way or another, and it's a very difficult process, right? Because there's you envision certain things for your kids still, I think, in our generation, right? And And there is a little bit of grieving, mourning, and confusion about, like, okay, so what, especially if it's not like I'm gay, or, you know, if it's like I'm transgender or I'm queer. There's a lot of the phrasing that a lot of us are completely unfamiliar with. I've had to learn a lot of this stuff from kids, but I've got the luxury of doing that.
Right.
Whereas a lot of parents get blindsided and they're not sure, like, okay, so what does this mean? And how do I treat you differently now? Like, a lot of us need a playbook, and there isn't a very clear one out there.
I just feel bad for him because he's really taking grief. And, you know, dressing up as a girl if you're a boy is not going to make you gay.
Right.
And I know that he didn't think that's true, but he doesn't know. And you're right. People deal with it differently. I don't think for a minute John would have a problem dealing with it later on if it showed up that one of his kids was transgender or something. It's just confusing to people. The unknown is scary, isn't it?
The unknown is scary, and I think John is just expressing something that I think a lot of people feel, is that, you know, like, I'm not sure what that means, and I'm not sure that there isn't some suggestibility to our kids. I hear that from parents a lot, like, mm-hmm. you know, wow, there's so much fluidity out there. Mm-hmm. Is my kid gonna be, is this a phase, or, you know, what is this something just my kid's going through temporarily,
right.
or is this something he or she really is?
Would your opinion on this change at all, either drastically or non-drastically, based on the region of where this took place? We live in Chicago, which is a fairly progressive area, but there are some places that are some are more progressive, some are less. Would that alter your answer on this
for
at all?
Sure. It would. I mean, just being really straightforward and honest, I think in more rural areas, this might be a little less understood and accepted, and so my answer would be wildly different than it is, you know, right here in the city or in the suburbs.
Something else to bring up, and several texters have mentioned this, I've been thinking this all along, is this story a different story if it's a girl that wants to dress as a boy character for Halloween? And sadly, it is to some extent, isn't
for
it?
For sure, right? I mean,
you
think
know how
about
many
it.
Boy characters I dressed as? Even as a kid,
sure.
I was such a tomboy in what I wore.
Yeah.
That didn't change who I was. That was who I was.
Right. No, and I think even when we were kids, you know, girls dressed as, you know, baseball players or in suits like men, you know, like that was pretty normal and kind of cute and kind of funny, whereas we looked at the boys sideways if they were dressed like a girl. There's no doubt about it that's changed. That was true 15 or 20 years ago, too. This has all changed pretty quickly, again, with a nod to John.
I want to throw one more spin into this, I'm sure it's one that you've experienced at some point. Let's put the same scenario out. It's a six-year-old boy that wants to dress like a princess. Sometimes you're going to get a situation where one parent says, yeah, let him dress like a princess, and the other parent says, oh, no, that's not going to happen.
Right.
What do you do when it tears the parents apart that way?
Yeah, so I always encourage parents in situations like that that are pretty sensitive for the kid, or could be, to make those decisions outside of that realm where that child is present, and come to some consensus. But the last thing you want to do is shame a kid for that choice, right? You know, he's making that choice for a reason. So I usually encourage parents in situations like that to be curious, like to ask your kid, so what draws you to this? This is an interesting choice. So talk to us about it, you know, without it being an interrogation. And to the extent that you can put your fear and your own judgment aside, you know, just like, be curious, because there's a reason, right? There's a reason that a six-year-old boy is interested in dressing like a girl. And, you know, it'd be interesting for parents to know that.
Yeah.
You say no shame, no judgment, and we know what our parents did. And I'm sorry, I think that's why I listened to my mom, because of shame and judgment that she put on me. And a lot of other people listening, when did that change? Because it seemed to work. Like, I was kind of afraid of my mom.
I was afraid of my dad. I think that I think it's a struggle to be a parent today, because the old techniques don't work anymore. And I think with the onset of social media and just the availability of all the information known to man, like, I work with a lot of situations where and this is usually playful in families, not always, where a child will say, Well, I happen to know the number for DCFS. So mm-hmm. if you cross me, mm-hmm. I will dial that yeah. number. And usually it's playful, but kids aren't kidding that they're not just aware that that's a thing that exists, but there's a phone number and I can find that because I can find anything.
Right. But they don't realize what the repercussions of that phone call would be.
And oftentimes that does happen.
Yeah.
You know, so kids don't call unless it's a serious thing, right? Because that has happened even in my practice where, it was a mistake, for sure.
Hey, can you remember a time where things have shifted this dramatically in such a short span of time? It just seems like in the last 10 years or so, and again, I know social, I understand that computers and social media right. play into that, but it just seemed like everything was kind of status quo for a long, long time, and then it was the exact opposite.
I think gender roles are switching faster than almost anything ever has.
Yeah.
You know, like we've had this onset of different types of like, nicotine and marijuana delivery devices and things like that. This has shown up in the last few years. But really the shift in gender roles, that's a major, major shift.
Yeah.
And in our kids' generation, that happened really fast and it's continuing.
Yeah.
There's enormous acceptance across the board.
I remember asking you this a couple months ago, and your answer is still playing in my head, about how all those the books about raising children, we had dozens and dozens of them for years and years.
Right.
You can almost just throw them out the window at this point because of all the changes that have happened recently, right?
Yeah, because it used to be that parents could they could distribute wisdom to their kids because we knew more than our kids about their world, right?
Yeah.
So we could teach them about their world. We could lecture them about their world. Now, we know way less about the world our kids are experiencing than they do.
And so, it's okay to say that as a parent, right?
Yeah.
It's all right to be honest and say flat out, you know more about this than I do. I'm here to guide you, but you know more than I do.
It's imperative. We don't know how Snapchat works. We have to ask.
Right.
Right? We have to learn from them
a
lot more, and we have to listen a lot more than we speak.
So that doesn't equal disadvantage, or does it? Like in the old days, under the old rules, it was just assumed your mom and dad know more than you. They've lived it. You haven't. But now, is it okay for a parent to say to their kids exactly that? I don't know as much about this as you do.
I don't think it's a disadvantage. I think it's a connection. I think it's kind of like, you know, that admitting like, hey, you know, we're going to have to kind of navigate this together, but you're going to have to teach me the basics because I don't really know those.
Right.
You know, like that's a really great connection for kids. And kids like that idea that, you know, like my mom or my dad doesn't know this, so I'm going to sit them down and walk them through it, you know?
Yeah.
But a lot of parents don't want to admit they don't know because they're the parent and they don't want to say, oh, I'm sorry, I messed that up.
Right.
Or I don't know about this because that's just not how we were brought up. Our parents always knew, allegedly.
Right. And we also don't want to share our stories, right? We think we're giving tacit permission if we say, I drank when I was in high school. We think like, oh, no way I'm going to share that with my kids. And I always encourage parents like, to share your stories, in large part because kids today are really savvy. They know in all likelihood you probably did the things that they're doing.
You know me. I'm pretty much an open book. I say it on the air. I am honest with my kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I am who I am.
I like
Popeye.
It.
Yeah.
Yep. All right.
I'll go on.
Mental health days, very important. We get sick days through a lot of corporations. We get sick days here at work. Should we be getting mental health days? We're going to take a break and talk about that with Dr. John Duffy next. It's 720 WGN.
It's Phil Leff and Wendy Snyder. Dr. John Duffy is here. He's got a new book, you know, Parenting the New Age. I'm sorry,
no.
Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It's a lot to say, John.
I did that on purpose to you.
Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. It could be a good Christmas gift.
It absolutely
could be. A great
I
one.
Encourage
yeah.
it. As a,
could
a
be a great Hanukkah
stopper.
Gift.
Absolutely.
Yes. Something for Ramadan?
I'm hoping so.
Everything. Let's talk about mental health days. Again,
yeah.
Wendy described them very, very accurately. This is a fairly new concept. What exactly is going on?
Right. So a few states, Florida, Colorado, Utah, Washington, are considering in legislature allowing a certain number of mental health days per semester or school year for kids from grammar school all the way through high school.
Yeah. And let's stress a very important aspect. No questions asked.
No questions asked.
Right?
Right, right.
Really?
Just a note from mom and dad saying, this is the mental health day. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. It's a good idea.
I agree. I love the idea. I think it takes a lot of the stigma away from I'm having a hard time, I'm depressed today, I'm anxious today, I'm overwhelmed today. And I work with more and more kids who have difficulty getting to school a lot of the time, to take the stigma away from that and to know, okay, for a day or two this semester, this is going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Parents have been doing this actually on the sly for a very long time. You know what I mean? And just saying, oh, okay, I'm going to call in and I'll call in sick. But
right.
This takes another step because it does take any stigma even within the household away from it. Like, we're allowed this. We can do, it's no big deal at all. And it normalizes the idea that kids suffer depression, anxiety, and they get stressed and overwhelmed.
Because I know at our kids' high school, you get 7 excused absences. Like if a parent calls you in and says, you know, they're not coming in today,
right.
You get 7 of those, no questions asked. Anything beyond that, you'd need a doctor's note or something. So
7 throughout the year, Wendy, or
no,
simultaneous?
No, semester.
Oh, per semester?
It's per semester.
Oh.
And I just... When I think back to when I was in high school, my mom didn't let me stay home very frequently. But
right.
if I said I got a test, I'm not ready for it, my mom would call me in. I think we should be able to do that.
Well, I like the within a household, I like the camaraderie, like the working together of a parent and a child. Like, you know, I get this is a really stressful day. You know what? We're going to give you a pass today. You know what I mean? Like, and once or twice, 3 times a semester, I don't mind that at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Can't take advantage of it, though.
Right. Well, that's the fear on the other side, and this is happening in arguments in these legislatures, is like, you know, we're coddling our kids and we're giving them the opportunity to take advantage. And so that, I suppose that's probably going to happen. But the upside of removing some of the stigma and allowing for these days, I think it's going to work well for kids.
You listed the states. It's a very small list. Why is it such a small list? And do you think other states, if this goes through in the beginning states, will more of them glom onto this?
Well, if you picture kind of Colorado, Washington, Utah, they're oftentimes in the front of a couple of different movements.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And so I think sometimes there are test states that try certain things out to see how they play and how they work. And, you know, I know that in Florida, they've been running into a problem with kids just not coming to school. And so this is one way.
Because they live in Florida. Who'd want to go to school if you lived in Florida? There's a lot to do.
Right. So this is a way to mitigate some of that, too. It's kind of like, you know, there's an administrative element to this, too, where it's like, okay, there's less paperwork involved, and we can just allow this to happen a couple times a semester without making a big deal out of it.
Are they even looking at this in Illinois or not yet?
As far as I know, not yet.
Not yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about employers looking into it? Because, you know, we working people every once in a while need a mental health day, don't we?
This is actually a cue that these states have taken from large employers that allow a couple of mental health days every year. And you are able broadly in some big consulting firms and some law firms to declare this is a mental health day, literally a mental health day. And so I'm going to take this day off.
I know you have personal days, but I'd like to see it change from being called a personal day. I offer way too much information about everything. So
right.
I would say a mental health day. I need it. And I like the fact that the stigma is being erased if we all are talking about it openly and honestly.
When I heard in Colorado specifically, they're encouraging the families to say it's a mental health day and not just a personal day or a day where we have a doctor's appointment, to be overt about that in an effort to eliminate stigma to some extent.
Can I ask you something completely unrelated to what we were just discussing?
Absolutely.
There's a story that took another turn yesterday. This kid that was bullied, there was a kid that was bullied. He was beat up by a couple of kids. He ended up dying from the injuries. I'm sure you're aware of the story. I can't figure out anything good that could possibly come of this story. The school was aware that this kid had a history of being bullied. Two of the kids kind of sucker punched him. He hit his head on a pole. He ended up dying, like I said. Is there something, John, that we can learn from the story? Because it's just horrible.
Yeah, you know, one interesting thing that is now falling out of stories like this is kids are talking about it. So I didn't know about that story until the other day when, I don't know, 3-4 kids maybe told me about the story.
Yeah.
And they talk about it amongst themselves. You know, there's dissonance among kids when bullying is concerned. You know, whereas maybe a generation ago, this was something we kind of just accepted as part of high school or middle school life. Kids no longer accept this. So there's this question of like, you know, boy, I thought we were better than this. I'm surprised we're allowing this to happen. Mm-hmm. What do you think happened in this particular instance that things went so sideways here? You know, so I think the upside, if there is one to something like this, is our kids are talking about it and they're working it through. And I think that, honestly, they're trying to kind of put bullying out of business kind of finally and forever.
Can that happen?
I think that this generation is onto it. You know what I mean? And kindness is a big thing for them. And so there's a lot of anti-bullying campaigns that aren't just run by schools, but are actually run by students, seriously, and which is different than it used to be. So do I think that can happen 100% altogether everywhere? Probably not. Do I think we can make a massive dent? I think kids are already doing that.
Good.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me how much kids know about what's going on in the world news-wise. I mean, think about it. When we were growing up, the news was on basically at 10 o'clock at night. Sometimes you'd watch it with your parents. A lot of times, as a young kid, you'd stay away from that. But now I get stressed out when I hear my phone just vibrate when I wake up, and it wakes me up now.
Right?
I know that's terrible. I should move my phone. But I look to see what's happening with the world, and if it's stressing me out, I've learned how to deal with my stress a little bit. Kids can't figure that out yet. They're being inundated with what's going on.
This is part of the difficulty of being a kid today, and this is what's new. This is part of their lives that we are not privy to. They know what's going on everywhere. You know what I mean? Just that the notifications that we have popping up, they have popping up, and sometimes more, because they troll a bunch of different websites. They'll look at Reddit. They'll look at, you know, the Huffington Post, but they'll look at a bunch of other sites too and gather a whole bunch of information. So they're inundated with a whole lot of notifications before their feet hit the floor in the morning, and they know what's going on in the world. And usually it's not good news.
Yeah, it seems like it. And I know social media adds to their stressors, is a stressor for them as well, like the wanting to be liked and not liked in their posts. But I'm just thinking about these news alerts. I'm shocked at how much young kids know today about what's going on in the big world of
it's
ours.
It's amazing what they know. It really is.
So what should we do? Throw our phones away?
Throw our phones away, John? Is that what you want us to do?
Let's throw our phones away. Absolutely. No, I think what we need to do is to talk to our kids more about what's going on and respect that they understand what's going on.
You and have an opinion.
Yeah, and you can start those conversations earlier in their lives than you think.
Right.
Way earlier.
Yeah.
The book is called Parenting the New Teen in the Age of Anxiety. I highly recommend it. I love it. I'm flipping through it. I'm reading different chapters. I'm doing it out of order. Is that okay?
I encourage it. I encourage reading it out of order.
But that makes sense, right? You go to the parts that seem
most needful
to you.
And it's laid out, you know, kind of issue by issue. And some issues are going to jump out to some parents and some are going to jump out to others as, you know, as priorities, for sure.
Right. The book is available now wherever your favorite books are sold. You're doing like a big book tour. You have anywhere coming up?
I know I'm talking up at New Trier. I think that's coming up in January. There are one or two others, but they are eluding me right now.
Are they up on drjohnduffy.com or follow you on Facebook?
Yep.
And plug the podcast really quickly, John, too.
Yeah. So I've got two podcasts. So one is with my wife, Julie. It's called Better. You can find that on iTunes. One with Heidi Stevens.
Called Not As Good.
Oh,
I don't know why.
Heidi, if you're listening,
why did you name it Better and Not As Good?
To Bill, not
that doesn't
me.
Make sense.
It
was the
good.
Only title that was left. It's called On Purpose. It's with Heidi Stevens from the Tribune.
It's very good. It's very, very good. John, always fun when you come up. We always learn a lot. That's the important thing. So thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for
and we'll talk
me.
To you in 2 weeks. That's Dr. John Duffy, Wendy. That's who that is.
It is Dr. John Duffy. And coming up after the news, a guy that I used to work with at Triton College Radio.
Oh.
We both had a radio show. He is a published author. He's going to be involved in a Lit Fest. He's also an author. His name's Bill McCormick, and we'll talk to him after the news. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we have a guest in studio that I knew in my blossoming days of broadcasting. Bill McCormick is with us. You're a Renaissance man, you're a writer, you're a broadcaster, you're an artist. What are you not?
Well, I'm not a brain surgeon. Oh. I've never done that.
Oh.
Actually, no form of surgery. Really.
All right, good. I met you when I was going to Triton College, and I worked at WRRG.
The Rock of River Grove.
Yes. Thursday nights, I did a music show, and then you had your own specialty show afterwards.
I had two. I had The Scene, which I did 10 to midnight, right, which was all local music. And then from midnight to 2 a.m., I did Naked Radio, which was me being a teenager left unsupervised with lots of girls calling in. So that was...
And probably naked, knowing you.
Oh, yeah.
Not a scent of embarrassment. No, not even a small hint.
When we did the... They just, last year, they did a 40th anniversary of Triton College Radio. I don't know if you went to it.
I didn't know about it. So
I went, and they had me in a room with Scott Dirks and Rich Padgett, who were my two former program directors.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this conversation immediately went off the rails because all they wanted to do was gripe about the fact that I did all these borderline illegal things.
We did.
Over and over and over again. And I had fun. You know, I was 19. You're not giving me any money. I'm getting something out of this.
Right.
And so I did that. And
we've come a long way since Triton College Radio. We're sitting on WGN Radio right now.
Damn Skippy we have. And what a road we've taken to get here.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your road, your backstory. You're an author now, and you're going to be at a local Lit Fest, but I don't know which one.
It's the South Chicago Public Library Local Lit Fest. It's literally called the SCPL Local Lit Fest. Lit Fest. It's down at 9055 South Houston in Chicago. That's 3,000 East or 3,300 East and 9100 South.
Explain to people who have never experienced one of these Lit Fests, Bill, what exactly goes on there.
Well, you get a variety of different authors, and I'm actually really proud of the group we put together. We've got Dave Chakasis, who's a constitutional lawyer who's argued in front of the Supreme Court. He's a conservative, mm-hmm, Bush-supporting guy. And then we have Little Alice, who's an LGBTQ. She does a drag burlesque thing in front of mermaids for mermaids and unicorns. And we've got
think
everything.
Those audiences might go into the wrong hall one day. What would that be like?
It might be enlightening. It might be enlightening. But we've got a really nice plethora of stuff. We've got stuff for kids down there. We've got authors who do children's books.
Yeah.
We've got authors who do children's comics. I do adult-oriented stuff. I have an adult comic out now called Legends Parallel that has been in the top 10 of the national polls for indie comics since 2017.
Congratulations.
1917. I've been here.
It's a long time.
You look good for your age.
Yeah, no, 2017. And right now I've got 5 titles in the top 12.
Oh, wow.
So we're pretty thrilled.
That's
about
excellent.
That. Yeah, yeah. And
so it is one of those situations where there's something for everybody. Yeah, if you go there, you'll find something you enjoy.
Yeah, basically, we've got... South Chicago Public Library has the largest, people don't realize when you go south of Madison Avenue, there's still civilization,
mm-hmm,
but they have the largest hall room, you know, not a banquet hall, but a hall.
A conference hall,
of any of the libraries other than outside of Harold Washington. And so we can put a few hundred people down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to have 20 authors from all over, ranging from people who've worked with Johnny Cash and they're telling their stories about what their life was like on the road, to that guy Steve Silver. He just performed at Riot Fest doing spoken word.
Mm-hmm.
We got Jibba Molay Anderson, who's a Liberian artist who lives here in Chicago. He's a teacher at the University of Illinois, I believe, and professor. And he's going to be down there discussing the history of graphics as a form of communication.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have seminars from the different authors. Carlos Jimenez Flores, who's the president of the Puerto Rican Day Committee here in Chicago. He's also an accomplished poet. Actually, I knew him as a poet before I knew him as a Puerto Rican activist, because I just love his stuff. But
boy, you're running the gamut of...
Well, that's the idea of a Lit Fest. I mean, sometimes you do like science fiction only or fantasy only or this only, that only. But when you do a Lit Fest, the whole idea is to get people... You walk in the door, look for something you're looking for your kids or for yourself or whatever, and then you have all these other options that you may never have considered. And I've had people walk up to me at Lit Fest who were like, "Well, I'm here for historical. Ooh, that looks interesting."
And,
you know, and just you start that conversation.
Sure.
And like I said, we've got 20 published authors down there in multiple genres, and you know, I've named a few. I don't want to go through the whole list, and we'll be here all day.
Is there a website where people can go to find out the times and dates and all this stuff? It's this Saturday, correct? November 2nd?
It's this Saturday. Actually, you can find it up at, the Chicago Public Library website.
I'll find it for you.
But, they have it up there. You just look up by branch, and they have it. It's the South Chicago Public Library branch. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
But it's 9055 South Houston in Chicago.
Are these presentations done at the same time or spread out?
They're going to be hourly. So the presentations are we have a, what's called a small conference room that holds about 30 people.
Yeah.
So the presentation will be in there so it doesn't interrupt the flow of the actual LitFest.
Oh, good.
And then the LitFest itself, like I said, you know, we can pack people in there. We'll have snacks. Come on by. We'll have
yeah. Oh, snacks. Do it. All right. Yeah. Talk us into it.
Here's the cool thing about this. I've done LitFest in Kankakee, Batavia, all around Northern Illinois, and mm-hmm. I've done cons all over the Midwest. I've been a featured artist or a featured author at many of them. But in Chicago, because of the labyrinth of rules, you could not do something like this in a Chicago public library.
Because why?
There were rules against floppies, which is what our comic books are called.
Floppies?
They don't accept them into the curriculum. They don't accept them into the library system.
They're not legit.
It's partly that, and partly they don't have a long shelf life. Oh. A lot of times. There's logic behind their rules, but not logic, because other libraries, like, for example, I just recently was down at Crest Hill Library for the White Oaks Literary Festival, and I was signing comics for all the... They had librarians showing up and, you know, offering me to get into their library. I ended up being included in, like, four library systems down there with just the comics.
Yeah.
And other library systems can make it work, but in Chicago, there's a lot... You know, it's a bigger system, so it's hard to move stuff off the dime. But these rules have been in place since the 80s when comics were printed on... paper. They were printed on newsprint. Now, like my comics, I work with a company out of Texas called Nerdonatics. Everything's printed on high gloss paper with high resolution covers. It's
a work of art. It's beautiful.
I mean, they are beautiful. Hybrid Zero. I can't phrase this right on the radio. Anyway, one lady, I was going to quote her, and then I realized you'd lose your license.
Oh, yeah.
See why people worried about him at Triton College Radio?
Now I get it.
Hybrid Zero is this big magazine-sized comic. It's huge. And this lady just held it, and she's just like, oh, God. You know, she had a visceral reaction. That's a good. I can get away with visceral, can't I?
Yeah, you can say that.
Yeah.
Okay. But she loved it, and the Hybrid Zero universe has got Juggernaut, Jungle Girl, and Cassandra and the Changeling Sword just came out. So we've got three completely separate things going on in one big giant universe.
And this is happening Saturday, November 2nd. Doors open at 9, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. South Chicago Public Library. They do have a Facebook page, so look it up, SCPL Local Lit Fest. Bill McCormick with us. Your story is interesting, how you got from WRRG to where you are today. And James Brown was involved. You started telling Bill and I about this.
Yeah, I'll bullet point some of this stuff. After I left Triton College, I worked for a while for Z95 doing the local music show there and a couple of fill-in dates. And while I was doing that, I was working with a lot of musicians, and I knew I was never going to be a famous musician. I just wasn't that good. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't that good. And I did not see myself living my life playing bars when I was 70.
Yeah.
So I started going over to the business side because I had some acumen for that, and I was good at booking shows, handling things, what have you. Ended up becoming James Brown's business road manager and worked for him. Yeah.
How does that happen?
I was working for a lawyer who needed somebody to handle something, and one thing fell into another, and Judge L. Bradley, who was James Brown's personal manager for his whole life. Judge Bradley liked me, plucked me, and said, here, do this.
And what was it like?
Enlightening.
Sure.
Mr. Brown, this is true. Mr. Brown had a rule. It was $100,000 for him to show up and play. If you wanted the band, that was extra.
Oh, wow.
And that was his life. He would, you know, people would, I got flown to L.A. and taken to parties just by people who wanted me to see if I could get that price down.
Yeah.
And for me, I knew the answer was no.
Right.
So for me, it was like, cool, free plane ride, some free booze, and some eats. I'm in.
You know? Yeah. He would not work for less.
No.
If you said, we got our budget's $90,000.
That's Bill Left money.
Yeah, that's my money. Sure it is. Sure it is.
No, he absolutely wouldn't. And usually he got paid in cash. So I've heard about that.
Right? Yeah.
Before he walked on stage, he had to be paid.
He wanted his money in cash.
He'd take a cashier's check for the down payment.
Yeah.
But when he showed up at the show, that money had to be in cash. And I mean, I couldn't tell you the number of times I was walking around with $50, $100,000 in the duffel bag, just wandering through casinos.
Jeez.
And,
all right, then there was a website, Jay the Joke, that you had something to do with.
Jay the Joke was started by Pat Dahl,
legendary Pat Dahl,
and Mike Lynch, the writer Mike Lynch. I don't know if you know him, very talented cat. And they started it, and then they were starting to get jobs in the real world in the sports industry, and you know, there's a conflict writing horrible things about sports when you're trying to work for them.
Right.
And I was writing a bunch of stuff there, and Pat and I worked out a deal, and I took over the site. And when I first took it over, it kind of was like on the downstroke, and Jay Mariotti was kind of becoming irrelevant.
A lot of people did not like Jay Mariotti. You loved him or hated him.
Polarizing figure.
Yeah.
He's an idiot.
Oh. But, all right. Jury's out.
But I wanted to do something with the site, so I started focusing on different things. Worked out a background deal with MLB to get access to a lot of stuff for them. So we kind of became the go-to place for Major League Baseball rumors, and we were right often enough, as so often ahead of the curve, that as funny as the site was and as scandalous as it was and as salacious as it was, if you wanted that information, and I know many sports writers now, I'm not going to be naming names.
Yeah,
no,
don't. I need to keep my job, Bill.
Yeah, we'll keep your job, but I'm still friends with many sports writers from that era
who
they went to our site first thing in the morning.
To get the news.
To get what was going on.
Who was being traded.
Who was being traded. Who was using drugs. We had some underground stuff.
Oh, wow.
And we would get proved. It would come up again, you know, 3, 4 weeks, 6 weeks later, but bang, we were on top of it. And finally, you know. So we had, it was really cutting edge.
Did MLB want that stopped? Did they want to put an end to that?
No, not at all.
They were okay with it?
They were okay with it because, well, first of all, it was information that was going to be public anyway.
Right.
We all knew that. And I never printed anything without verification. I always had verification.
Yeah.
And I actually had 4 scouts that worked with me to verify different things and information, especially on players coming up or on Barry Bonds, steroid usage or any of that kind of stuff. We had people on the ground level to verify it, everything we did. And a couple of times I did get contacted by MLB attorneys, I turned over the names of the people I'd talked to and said, here you go.
Yeah.
Because it was private knowledge, from, you know, attorney to attorney kind of stuff. So
I remember reading stuff on there wondering if it was true, and it pretty much all was true. We have to take a quick break. He's Bill McCormick. You can find him on his website, Bill McSci-Fi, right?
Yeah, BillMcSci-Fi.com.
And it's the South Chicago Public Library Local Lit Fest. It's happening this Saturday, November 2nd, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're back in a minute. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we are here on 720 WGN. Bill McCormick is with us right now, sci-fi writer, artist. What else are you,
Bill? Actually, I'm not an artist.
You're not?
No, I couldn't draw a stick figure without having it look epileptic. No, I work with some amazingly talented artists from all over the world.
Okay, that's what it is.
I just write stories that they turn into these things that other people go, ooh.
And how many things have you published? Because it's astounding to me how successful you are.
How many things? I mean, I'm in numerous international anthologies. I've got, I don't know, 15 or 20 short stories out there. I've got 7 comic book titles in various series stages of being serialized. I've got a trilogy out now called The Brittle Riders, which got bootlegged in Russia, so that's funny. And now I've got a new book coming out next year called Goptri of the Mists, which is the answer to the musical question, what would happen if the Brittle Riders was set in India? If anyone ever asked that, they probably didn't, but I wrote it anyway.
So. Bill, this is a question that I ask all of our guests. Is there a warrant out for your arrest in Russia?
Yes, there is. When the Brittle Riders got bootlegged in Russia, they sold about 35,000 copies, and I'm never going to see a dime of that. And In the process of trying to get the bootleg stopped, we ended up in conversations with a couple of the Russian officials. And basically it came out like this. Because the book is pro-LGBTQ, because the book allows African-Americans or people of color to have prominent positions in it, and because the book makes religion seem like a sensible alternative or something positive in your life, I violated many of their standards and cultural standards, so that if I went to Russia, I would be immediately arrested. So we're clear here. I would be arrested for allowing them to bootleg my book into Russia, which they never paid me for.
Are you going to Russia anytime soon?
Nah. I've been to Russia. I was there in the 80s on a couple of blues tours, but I don't see myself going back.
What happens if a citizen of Russia is caught with one of these magazines? Do they do anything to them? It's a bootleg copy, but the same ideals are within the confines of the book. So what do they do?
I have no idea. Well, they bootlegged it digitally. They sold them for we were selling them in America for $1.99 a crack originally, just to get people to take a look at it.
Yeah.
and they were selling them for $3.99 a crack.
Oh, so wow.
We raised our price after that. But
And we're the capitalist society, not them.
So, they sold 35,000 of them at that price. And that much we know because we had trackers. And I've actually got screenshots of like 5,000, 10,000, you know, as the units were spinning out on their website. And they're all happy about it. Look at what we're selling. And I'm like, hey, it's my book.
So you're big in Russia like Hasselhoff is in what,
in
Germany?
Germany? Yeah, yeah. Germany. I should start doing kung fu movies in Germany. you're right. I do have fans in Russia. They've reached out to me.
Isn't that cool?
That's cool. I think the coolest thing of all my writing is that I have a fan club in India.
Hmm.
It's just like the strangest thing. I wrote an article about the history of UFO hoaxes,
mm-hmm.
and it got used in an Indian space program teaching seminar about how to think rationally and how to think logically when presented with, you know, alternative facts, or as we used to call them when I was a kid, lies. I'm old. I remember when people called them lies.
Yeah.
But anyway, it got printed and it got used out there, and we didn't know about it. So there was like a couple of years where I was getting these emails and different things from India, and I'm like, why? You know, what's going on here? And then finally, I was on a NASA website, ran across an Indian scientist who worked for the Indian Space Program,
yeah.
and he's like, oh, I know you. My son loves your work. And
I'm
like, huh?
Wow.
So we figured that out. So.
You are the most interesting dude. I mean, you've got nothing on who's the Dos Equis guy.
The most interesting man in the world?
I think you can take that title away from him, Bill.
Well, yeah, but then I'd have to drink beer. I've lost a lot of weight. Yes. I was up like 470 pounds, and I'm down under in the mid-2s right
now.
Wow. Headed down.
Congratulations.
So, yeah, it's like clean vodka for me and limited portions, and taking care of myself.
How long did it take you to drop that much weight? That's
on and off.
I've been doing it.
I lost a bunch of it from 2013 on, and I put some back on when I met my girlfriend because we did a lot of cuddling and not exercising.
Oh.
And, all right. But now we're both exercising. Cuddle pounds, you know?
I know, I get it.
But
so cuddling puts on weight, you're saying?
Yeah, because you're just laying in bed. And
yeah, you're not very active.
You're ordering out pizzas, you know? You're not eating healthy.
Right.
But you're not taking care of your... Well, never mind. You're not eating healthy.
Wow, that's excellent.
You are the most interesting man, in my opinion, in the world. He's Bill McCormick, and he is an author, and you can find him at BillMcSciFi.com. And please, if you've got nothing to do this Saturday, stop by the South Chicago Public Library Local Lit Fest. Bill will be out there. It's Saturday, November 2nd, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I didn't find a website, I have to be honest with you, but there is a Facebook page, so just Google it. And you might want to follow Bill on Facebook and his website, because you really are pretty funny, and we've come a long way since I think we both had our head shaved on one side when we were at Triton College.
Yeah.
Did you have to have your head shaved?
I was a poser. I liked all the 80s punk stuff, but I wasn't really that. You were in a band. I was not.
I was in a punk band. I toured. I was very much in and of the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
When, you know, and everyone else was listening to The Clash. I was listening to The Residents because I was even anti-punk. I was too punk for punk.
Wow.
Well, thank you for coming up. I haven't seen you in a very long time.
Well, let's not let 30 years pass again.
We will not do that. He's Bill McCormick. Go see him. BillMcSciFi.com. We're going to take a quick break, and then news coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, WGN Radio.